You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
I am just so happy to be here with you guys. Yeah. It's amazing. We told you that we would make it up to you for canceling Servant Team Retreat last year, so we decided to go all out. We hope that you guys enjoy the teachings, that you feel fed. You can come out of this feeling reinvigorated to serve God and to do His work. I was thinking a little bit about how the last year, it kind of reminds me of that scene in Band of Brothers, that episode, Bastogne. I don't know if you've ever seen that series. You know, Easy Company is getting shelled as they're holding the line at the Battle of the Bulge. They're facing casualties. They're losing morale. Lipton, who's the lieutenant, is jumping into foxholes and smoking cigarettes, even though he doesn't smoke, trying to keep the morale high. And as soon as spring hits, their fortunes change in an instant, and they're able to advance the line. And I feel like we're sort of at a crucial time in our church's history right now, where over the last year, we've been shelled, we've been discouraged, we have experienced casualties. And I think now is a time of new beginning, a time to move forward, a time to advance. And so that is why we chose our topic, confidence in leadership, which really should be called confidence in the Lord. And we hope to instill that as we spend time studying the Word. So with that, why don't we begin by getting our new servant team members and leaders to stand up. If you're new here, this is your first time, why don't you stand up? Yeah. That's awesome. Wow. God is at work in our midst still. I wanted to start off by looking at the life of Joshua, and particularly I want to look at Joshua chapter 3 and 4, the crossing of the Jordan. Now, one of the things that you should notice about the book of Joshua is that the Israelites entering into the promised land isn't the equivalent of us dying and going to heaven. The book of Joshua is really a book about new beginnings. And really, the Christian life is about new beginnings that, you know, the Canaanite conquest really resembles the Christian life in a lot of ways. It's about conflict and victory. It's about faith and obedience. It's about having God's spiritual riches and experiencing His rest. It's all about new beginnings. And as we face this new chapter in our ministry, we're going to experience a new beginning that will require our faith. Why don't we begin in Joshua chapter 3, verse 1. A little bit of background, the Israelites have been wandering in the desert for 40 years because of the first generation's unfaithfulness and their unwillingness to enter into the land of Canaan. And God regarded that as rebellion against Him. And so they have their second shot to enter into the promised land with the second generation. We're told early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out for Shittim. And I'll avoid the juvenile jokes. I won't take the bait. I know it's really hard. And they went over to the Jordan, the banks of the Jordan River, where they camped before crossing over. So this was about a 10-mile journey from Shittim all the way to the shoreline of the Jordan River. I'm sure the people were wondering, as they are standing there at the banks of the Jordan, what are we going to do next? What's the plan? Obviously, Joshua wasn't going to ask them to swim or ford the river since it was at flood stage. Typically, the Jordan River was about 100 yards, maybe, when it was at normal stage. But at flood stage, the Jordan River could swell, and it could be about a half mile to cross it. There's no way that they would have been able to build rafts and boats and to try to get all 2 million people to cross over the Jordan And so they probably were wondering, how are we going to enter into the land? Well, just like God spoke to Moses and revealed his plan, God revealed his plan to Joshua. He tells him in chapter 1, verse 10, 3 days from now, you will cross the Jordan here to go in and take possession of the land the Lord your God is giving to you for your own. So God has already revealed and given his word to Joshua, telling him how they're going to enter into the land. And so in verse 5, Joshua talks to all of the people as they're waiting there. And he told the people, consecrate yourselves tomorrow before the Lord, and he will do amazing things among you. It's not clear whether they knew the plan, but he says, I want you to consecrate yourself, which means to dedicate or to make yourself pure. Give your heart to the Lord because he is going to do something amazing among you. And so you have to put yourself in the shoes of the Israelites, right? What were they facing? First of all, they were facing mighty Jericho. In chapter 3, verse 16, we're told this interesting detail that the people crossed over opposite of Jericho. From where they were standing, it was probably visible. Standing there, mighty Jericho with its shining armaments, glistening. It's possible that they even heard the soldiers walking around with their armor clanking as they're readying for war, as the Hebrews are crossing over. And so this must have been really intimidating. I mean, God could have told the Israelites to cross over at any other point on the river. And what does he say? I want you to cross opposite Jericho. I want you to face your enemies and your fears. Secondly, we're told that there wasn't going to be any more manna. As soon as they would enter into the land, this manna that nourished them for 40 years, that kept them and their children from ever having any sort of disease, would be gone. And there would be a threat that maybe they would get sick. There would be a threat that they wouldn't eat because they've never cultivated the land. If you remember the generation that entered into the promised land, most of them did not grow up in Egypt. They did not know how to cultivate the land, so God would have to show them how to do that. And that they would have to trust year after year that they would sow in faith and God would give them a harvest. Also, there was no turning back. Once they crossed over, they would have to conquer the land. And so, there was a calculation here. They had to count the cost and really figure out, is it worth it? And yet, what was at stake? This was a crucial turning point in Israel's history. Their predecessors had made the mistake of rebelling against God and refusing to go into the land. And what happened? God said that you're going to spend another 40 years in the desert, and everybody who is 20 years and older, all of your bodies are going to fall in the wilderness before you can cross back over. What would have happened if they decided to rebel again? Would God make them do another 40 years? It could have been worse. We don't know. So there was a lot at stake here. And yet, one of the things that they had to calculate in all of this is that God was giving them great assurance in several different ways. First of all, we're told that God would go before them. The Ark of the Covenant represented God going before the Israelites, and we're told in chapter 3, verse 11, that the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth would go into the Jordan ahead of you. Unlike the local deities of the ancient Near East, the deities would send the troops forward as the idols would follow behind. But not the God of Israel. The God of Israel was different. He would go before his people. And we see the same thing in the New Testament, that God never calls on us to do something that he is unwilling to do himself. We're told that Jesus is not only the pioneer, but the perfecter of our faith. Jesus paved the way for the things that he's calling on us to do. Secondly, God called Joshua and the priests to lead the people into the Jordan and the Promised Land. He instructed the priest, I want you to carry the Ark of the Covenant and go into the Jordan River. You're going to lead the people in. And so there was tremendous responsibility on the shoulder of the priest to have courage, to exert faith, and to be the ones to lead the people forward. Now, a few weeks ago, we went on our elders' retreat. And one of the things I love about our elders' retreat is we do devotionals. And we spend time reading the word or reading excerpts from different books. And we also spend time in prayer. This year, we decided that we were going to spend a little bit of time in just silent prayer and listen for God's voice. And as I sat there for several minutes, I felt like God was speaking directly to me. And one of the things that he was telling me was, I'm calling you to lead this church forward. And that was really helpful because you know what? I go through this cycle, and it's a very predictable cycle where every time I take on new responsibility, where God calls me to lead at a higher capacity, I go through this period where I start to feel inadequate. I feel like my contribution isn't really unique, that I'm just simply a placeholder and anybody could basically do my job. And I have to admit to you, over the last couple years, I've struggled with this. I sort of feel like Joshua trying to fit into Moses' large shoes. I mean, it's difficult when you're standing in the shadow of somebody like Gary, who can skillfully divide the word of God and has impacted tens of thousands of people with his Bible teaching. Or think about Den, who is like extraordinarily gifted in so many areas. It's unbelievable. I mean, his capacity is mind-boggling. I was talking to one of the elders and he quipped, yeah, Den had a stroke and finally became a human. He's mortal now. And you know, what happens is when I look at those guys, the first thought I have is, I'm not like them. How am I going to lead these people forward? Then I look at the team that God has placed me on with the sphere leaders and elders. And one of the things that I am just in awe of is just how extraordinarily gifted some of them are in certain areas. It's unbelievable. You know, I think about Slim, for example. You may not know this about him, but his ability to track details is unbelievable. I mean, I joke that he is like a walking, talking Google Calendar with like notifications going off all the time. We'll be at an elders meeting and he'll be like, you know, I think we should have a discussion because 3 years ago we said we would talk about it. And I think, actually, you know, it's today. Or you think about Roch. I mean, his laser focus on studying the word, researching, writing, his ability to equip. I mean, he is a maven. It's amazing the amount of information he can collect, digest, distill, and teach to people in a way that they can understand. And let me be clear here. When I look at these people, I don't look at them as rivals or competitors. I look at them and I feel bad. You know, I have gifting in a lot of those different areas, but not to the extent that they do. And you know what God was impressing upon me? In that time of prayer, you don't need to be like these guys. You don't need to have their gifting. I have called you to lead this church, and that's what matters. And you know, when I trace the steps backward in time to how I got here, I realize I didn't put myself here. I didn't manipulate my way into this position. In fact, there were a lot of times where I was resistant to actually taking on more responsibility. And yet, God extruded me, to use the words of Francis Schaeffer, into this position of leadership. Now, a bunch of you stood up in your new leaders. Maybe you're here thinking the same thing. Do I belong here? should I be leading? Why did God call me to lead in such a difficult situation in history? Maybe he made a mistake. Remember, you didn't put yourself here. God called you here. Some of you might feel like, well, I've been leading for a while, but there is a person or a personality or somebody who is a wise brother or sister who influences the group in a way that I don't. And now they're gone. They're in a different group. Am I able for this to take up this task? And what does God say? He says, I've called you to lead my people forward. Some of you feel incredibly discouraged. This has been a hard year for you. And maybe you feel like, maybe I shouldn't lead anymore. Again, I want to remind you, you did not put yourself here. God called on you to lead this church. I love how one author puts it. You can never be too small for God to use, only too big. No matter how small or ungifted or incapable you feel, the only thing that matters is you have a God who is capable and powerful. Well, the other thing is that God gave Joshua assurance because he gave him his word. If you look at chapter 1, verse 3 through 9, God says to Joshua, you and all these people, get ready to cross the Jordan into the land. I'll give you every place you set your foot. No one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, I'm going to be with you. I will never leave you and I will never forsake you. Be strong and courageous because you will lead these people to inherit the land that I swore to their ancestors. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey the law. Keep it always on your lips. Meditate on it day and night so that you may be careful to do everything that is written in it. Then you will prosper and be successful. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. What an amazing word from God. And he gives them three promises that are coupled with three tasks that Joshua is supposed to perform. The first is God would enable him to cross the Jordan River and claim the land. Secondly, God would defeat the enemies that they encounter in the land of Canaan. And thirdly, he told Joshua to apportion the land to each tribe and its inheritance. And you see that this is really a very familiar pattern that you see throughout the Bible and also in the New Testament. Think about the promises that God gives you. Abide in me, and I will bear much fruit through you. Work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who is at work in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. You will be my witnesses in Judea, Samaria, and the ends of the earth, and I will give you the power of the Holy Spirit. Anytime God calls on us to do something, he also enables us with a promise. Now, when we look at God, he gave Joshua his word. And really, the secret of Joshua's victories wasn't his skill with his sword, but his submission to the word of God. One thing to know about Joshua, he actually was a pretty capable general, a mighty warrior. He defeated the Amalekites in the wilderness. And yet, that wasn't the reason why God was using him. It was because he was faithful to the word. Think about what God says to Joshua. He says, keep this book of the law. Always keep it on your lips. That is, talk to other people about it. Teach people my truth. Meditate on it day and night. Let it soak into your heart so that you may be careful to do everything that is written in it. Don't be merely a hearer of the word, but a doer of the word. And he says, if you do all those things, you will prosper and be successful. That was the main ingredient in Joshua's confidence and his success. It was the word of God and his faithfulness to it. Also, God assures him by giving him the word that as he was with Moses, he was going to be with Joshua, that he would never leave Joshua or forsake him. You think about all of the Old Testament heroes where God called on these people to lead, and what did he do? He assured Gideon, he assured David, he assured Solomon, I am with you, lead my people forward. And one of the beautiful and wonderful things about being a Christian believer is that he gives that promise to all of us. In Hebrews 13, verse 5, the author of Hebrews actually quotes this passage and he says, I will never leave you or forsake you. You can have my assurance that my presence is with you. Finally, he says, be strong and courageous. He says it three times. Be strong and courageous. Don't be afraid. Don't be discouraged. Why? Because I'm with you. And if you're on the side of the truth, then you have nothing to fear. You can be confident. And in the same way, God tells us, he tells you, I'm with you. And you're on the side of the truth. And so you can be confident to lead God's people forward. Verses 9 through 13, we're told, Joshua said to the Israelites, come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. The Ark of the Covenant of the Lord will go of the Lord of all the earth will go into the Jordan ahead of you. And as soon as the priests who carry the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot into the Jordan, and its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand up in a heap. So he instructs the priests. He says, what I want you to do is I want you to go out there and I want you to step your foot into the Jordan River, then it will part. Actually, verse 16 gives us a little bit more information. The water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a great heap a distance away while the rest of the water flowing down to the Dead Sea was completely cut off. And so there was this incredible wall of water as they stepped into the Jordan River and God started to part the waters of the Jordan. Now notice, he says, before I do anything, before I do something amazing among you, what do you need to do? You need to put your feet in the water. You need to get your feet wet. And you think about the situation that we're in. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of hesitation. There's concern about moving forward. So what does that look like to lead our people forward in a time of a pandemic? I think for some of us, it just means re-entering social situations. You know, after being locked up for an entire year, largely away from human contact, it gets really hard to be in social situations. And there's hesitancy, there's resistance, even though some of it's not very rational. I've talked to people who say, I just feel weird being in a room full of people even though I'm fully vaccinated. Ever feel that way? A lot of you feel that way right now. It's interesting. There have been actually a lot of articles and research that's been published recently about people's anxiety going into social situations and being around people. Here's one from the New York Times. Entitled, Need to Dust Off Your Social Skills? The article says, maybe you have a sense of ambivalence about how to interact with others again. If you used to work in an office, you might be worried about returning to work, but eager to see people again. Or you find yourself having to confront a neighbor about a long-standing problem, but you're out of practice with conflict resolution. I'm not sure I remember how to talk to another human anymore, let alone one that I disagree with. Whatever the specifics, there will be new forms of social anxiety, said Dr. Keltner, a professor of psychology at UC Berkeley. In another article from the Times, it's entitled, The Nervous Person's Guide to Reentering Society. Amy Bagel, unfortunate name, a fifth grade teacher in Charlotte, North Carolina, has already had COVID-19. Her husband did too. And now both of them have received their first dose of the vaccine. But when she thinks about gathering with other people outdoors this summer, she hesitates. The desire to see friends and extended family is definitely there, said Bagel, 40, a mother of four. But then we shoot down the idea. Sharona Pearl, 43, who lives in Philadelphia and is fully vaccinated, said she recently decided that it felt okay to have a cup of tea with another vaccinated friend. For the last year, public health experts have told us time and time again that if you don't socially distance and wear a mask, you're going to die. So as more people get vaccinated and we accelerate toward a new normal, is it any wonder that some people are feeling hesitant to let themselves go of those precautions? Last one. Meet the introverts who are dreading a return to normal. Shout out to all you introverts, right? The article begins, during a sad, tragic year, it was introverts who found a silver lining. There was more time alone. Like everyone else, introverts are excited about seeing family and close friends, dining in restaurants, traveling, but most are not interested in facing the forced small talk, big parties, the noisy offices. For most introverts, the outside world can sometimes require emotional labor. It's like being paroled for an entire year and then being told, actually, you're going back to prison again. You know, one of the things that it's going to require is putting one foot in front of the other. And as you do that, there is going to be this growing sense of confidence. It's okay. And listen, be patient with yourself. This has been a difficult year. And it's hard for us to deal with the cognitive dissonance of, okay, I'm safe. I'm fully vaccinated. And yet, why do I feel this resistance to re-enter into full fellowship again? But you know what? It's important for you to take steps forward. Because your people are looking at you. Like the priests, God is calling on you to step forward and to lead his people into a new beginning. For some of us, it's pursuing a new ministry venture. We're afraid. Maybe we feel like we don't have the skills to do it. And yet, one of the things that God tells us is that if it's his will, he will make that extremely clear to us. You know, for some of us, it may mean expressing this desire to somebody who's actually wise and can give us advice. Maybe it's taking a step forward and seeing whether or not it is God's will and seeing whether or not he closes the door. For some of us, it means dealing with a messy situation in your home church that you've been putting off. Maybe managing a conflict that's breaking out in your leadership team or in your church. We need to remember the promises of God and be obedient to his word. He tells us you need to be peacemakers. And when you broker peace in your home church, you will feel a sense of gladness and happiness when you do it. Also, it means leading your people back to full in-person fellowship. This is going to be hard. You know, you talk to most people and what will they say? I hate Zoom. But it's so convenient. You know, we fool ourselves into thinking, I'm a great multitasker. I can sit on a Zoom call and do a bunch of different things. That's not real. We're not multitaskers. We're serial processors, right? And so when we're sitting there working on a project or clearing out our inbox of our email, we're basically zoned out, not really tuned in to what's going on at our home church meeting. You know, for me, I experienced a little bit of this when about a month ago we decided that we were going to have our first all-in-person, all-indoor home church with masks. And it sounded like a really great idea. I was super excited about it until the day before. And then I started to calculate, okay, so this means that I'm going to have to, like, get my kids and then go to home church early, walk them up to their room, put them down to bed, and then a few hours later, go back, wake them up, and then watch them descend like zombies to the living room, take them to the car where they're going to fall asleep for 10 minutes, and then arrive at home, wake them up, and then make them take the long walk back upstairs. I was dreading it. And yet, as I was sitting there at like 11:30 or 11:45, hanging out, belly laughing because of things that people were saying and looking around the room, as everybody is sitting there relating and having a great time, I thought to myself, this is why we do this. This is worth it. This is a minor inconvenience compared to the incredible privilege it is to be with the body of Christ. You see, you lose sight of things if you haven't done them for a long time. You don't realize you've been starving until you finally get a meal and you're like, this is why we do this. Okay, Joshua 4. We're not going to read the whole chapter, I promise. Verse 10. Now the priests who carried the ark remained standing in the middle of the Jordan until everything the Lord had commanded Joshua was done by the people, just as Moses had directed Joshua. Notice, the priests didn't step foot into the Jordan and then God parted the waters and then they scurried over to the other side. God said, no, I want you to actually stand in the riverbed holding the ark of the covenant as the people passed through. All 20 million, or 2 million of them. And I'm sure that there were times where they were looking upstream as there was this wall of water foaming, threatening to crash down on them. They were probably afraid and probably hastening people like, okay, let's go. The text actually tells us that people hurried over. I'm sure they were speed walking over the other side looking at that wall of water. You know, the priests must have been totally afraid as they were standing there in that riverbed. But what they realized is they were standing there in the shadow of this wall of water was that they were in the safest place they could possibly be in the universe. Next to the ark with God in his presence. You see, the safest place for you to be is right in the middle of God's will. As soon as all of them had crossed over, the ark of the Lord and the priest came to the other side while the people watched. Then the Lord said to Joshua, command the priest carrying the ark of the covenant law to come up out of the Jordan. And the priest came up out of the river carrying the ark of the covenant of the Lord. And no sooner had they set their feet onto the dry ground than the waters of the Jordan returned back to the place and ran at flood stage as before. And so there you have the story of the crossing of the Jordan River. So what was the outcome? First, God performed an amazing miracle because the nation of Israel consecrated themselves before the Lord. And he promised them that he would do that. Much like this event in Israel's history, this is a crucial turning point in our church's history. I believe that. One of the things that I think is an outstanding quality of our church is the dedication and the commitment people have to fellowship. It's one of the most amazing things about our church. The fact that we're actually living out the one another passages like the New Testament commands. And what if we never get back to the kind of fellowship that we experienced pre-pandemic? Are we going to descend into the institutional church? We've tried that before. It doesn't work. It's not part of our DNA. And you know what? It has a cascading effect as well. One of the great lights that we emit in this world is the love that we share with one another. And if we don't have that, then people aren't going to notice anything different about us. It's going to damage our witness. So there's so much at stake. Consecrate yourself before the Lord, and he will do an amazing thing in our midst. Finally, all of God's promises to Joshua came true. Remember those three promises he gave? God delivered on each and every one of those. And you know, when we stake our lives on God's promises and we act in obedience, he's going to come through. This is what Joshua says at the end of his life. Soon I will die, going the way of everything on earth. Deep in your hearts, you know that every promise the Lord your God has given has come true. Not a single one has failed.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.